Choose Your Priorities Wisely, a compilation.
Everyone has priorities. We arrange our schedules, budgets, and relationships according to perceived importance. Putting God first means we give Him top priority over everything else. He is the principal figure in our lives and central to all we do and think. Putting God first means that we keep the greatest commandment: love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. Everything we have and everything we are is devoted to Him. We hold nothing back. Putting God first means that we strive to follow in Jesus' steps. Jesus' life was characterized by total submission to the Father's will, service to others, and prayer. Jesus taught us to seek the kingdom of God above all else. That is, we are to seek the things of God over the things of the world. Those who put God first will stand out from the rest of the world. The Christian life is characterized by moment-to-moment selfless service to God that flows from love for Him and His people. In all things, the believer trusts, obeys, and loves God above all else. GodQuestions.org. This day of life is a precious gift from me. Treat it as the treasure it is by prayerfully prioritizing. As you look into the day that stretches out before you, seek my face to help you discern what is most important. Set priorities according to my will, and use them to guide you as you go along your pathway. This practice will help you make good choices about the use of your time and energy. When you reach the end of the day, you can feel at peace about the things you have done, and also the things you have not done. I encourage you to invite me into everything you do. The briefest prayer, "Help me, Lord," is sufficient to involve me in your activities. I delight in your acknowledgement that you need me continually, and I want you to delight in your neediness, for it is a strong link to my radiant presence. Although living in a dependent mode is countercultural, it is a blessed way to live, rejoicing in the glory of my presence. Jesus. If today was going to be your last day and you knew it, how much time would you spend on things that mean nothing in the scope of eternity? Your minutes would be extremely valuable, and you would choose to spend them on the things that were most important to you. The things of the world would seem pointless, almost offensive to your spirit. You would want to love those dear to you, and to make sure they know how much they mean to you. You would be righting any wrongs and working out anything that had come between you. If you have ever come face to face with death, or been with a loved one through a life-threatening illness, and seen their priorities realign, you understand this. Everything becomes abundantly clear in those moments. The only thing that matters is love. In good times and rough times, The happiness and joy that Jesus can give you is light years beyond anything that the world can offer. Fulfillment, peace, love, satisfaction, knowledge, truth. There is no way that the world can compete with him in those areas. It takes discipline of mind and body to learn to treasure those things above the fleeting pleasures that the world has to offer. It's a matter of satisfying your heart and mind more than your five senses. When it comes down to it, that's really all the world can give you, the temporary satisfaction of sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches. But beyond those things, nothing the world has can satisfy the other cravings in your soul. Only Jesus can really satisfy. He is the answer. Maria Fontaine. How would you feel about an incident that cost you your nose, half your right arm, and all the fingers on your left hand? I'm guessing that you wouldn't have positive feelings. But that's what happened to Dr. Beck Weathers, and he sees that loss as the defining event in his life. "Would I like to have my hands back?" he said in an interview on CBS Evening News. "Sure." "Would I like to have my hands back enough to go back to who I was?" "No." What event would cause a man to willingly embrace such a drastic disability? The answer can be found on Mount Everest. You see, Beck Weathers was one of the people on that peak during a blizzard in 1996 that cost 12 people their lives. Weathers was 49 years old when he ascended Everest. At that point, he had been a mountain climber for 10 years, and it consumed him. He acknowledges, "I regret the time taken away from my family, from my wife and two children. I realize I was defining myself by climbing and not dealing with the rest of my life. It's an excessive goal and it never ends. You get about one day of happiness, and then you're planning your next trip." Weathers always spent a lot of time in preparation for his next trip. Before Everest, he had scaled 6 of the 7 highest mountains, and for each climb he underwent a grueling training regimen. For the Everest climb, Weathers signed on with an expedition led by New Zealander Rob Hall. Before the team got to the high camp, at 26,000 feet, Weathers was doing fine despite the difficult conditions. Bitter cold and 1/3 of the oxygen present at sea level. But as he ascended the peak on May 10th, Weathers realized he was in trouble. Some years before, he had undergone radial keratotomy surgery to correct his vision. As he went up the mountain, the altitude caused the lenses in his eyes to flatten out, and that made him blind. At the time, the wisest decision seemed to be for Weathers to wait where he was, then rejoin the crew as they came back down from the summit. But a freak blizzard rapidly enveloped the mountain, dropping the temperature to about 50 degrees below zero and increasing winds to 70 miles per hour. The storm made everyone scramble for survival. As that happened, Weathers was left behind on the mountain. Hours passed, and he lapsed into a hypothermic coma. Fellow climbers searched for Weathers for hours, and early in the morning on May 11th, they found him. He was covered with ice and barely breathing. They knew he would die, so they left him where he was, returned to camp, and radioed his wife that he was dead. No person has ever come out of a hypothermic coma and survived, except Beck Weathers. Somehow he revived, got up, and staggered back into camp. His jacket was open, his face was black beyond recognition with frostbite, and his exposed right arm was frozen upright in front of him. Even after his miraculous return to camp, nobody thought Weathers would survive. But he kept pulling through. Back home in Dallas, he underwent 10 surgeries. They amputated the fingers on his left hand, amputated his right arm near the elbow, and reconstructed a new nose using tissue from other parts of his body. Through it all, Weathers went through a radical learning process. He believes he traded his hands for something more valuable. Lessons about himself, his values, and life. He admits, "I'm probably a much happier person now, having gone through what I've gone through. I have a different set of priorities. You never know who you are and what you are until you've really been tested. You gain a whole lot more from having failure kicked up from around your ears than success could ever teach you." John C. Maxwell.
You've been listening to an audio production by The Family International. Visit us at tfionline.com.